Let's talk Game Time, people, and the holiday season. Game Time's all about togetherness. And isn't the holiday season all about that, too? The answer is yes. This means when you bring people together at live events, the experience is that much better, and it's the perfect gift. And Game Time has this new feature called Game Time Picks. It makes getting tickets for live events even easier. I love using Game Time Picks because it filters out all the fluff, shows you only the incredible deals you want on the great seats you need, so you don't waste a single second searching through thousands of tickets. And then there's that all-in pricing feature I love. You see your total up front. There's no surprise fees at checkout. The price that they tell you is the price that you're going to buy. It's unbelievable. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code EISEN, $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
This episode is brought to you by Google Gemini. With the Gemini app, you can talk live and have a real-time conversation with an AI assistant. It's great for all kinds of things, like if you want to practice for an upcoming interview, ask for advice on things to do in a new city, or brainstorm creative ideas. And by the way, this script was actually read by Gemini. Download the Gemini app for iOS and Android today. Must be 18 plus to use Gemini Live.
Oh my God, you guys are my favorite.
This is the Rich Eisen Show. Rich Eisen.
I know what I'm talking about. That's the headline.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Dan Schwartzman.
OMG.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh.
And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Dan Schwartzman.
All right, hour number three here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. I will be back tomorrow as well. We got a lot to get into this hour. A little NBA talk yesterday. Five games on the NBA docket. I like the conversation people have had, by the way, which is, was that the NFL intruding on the NBA's day? And some people posting, a lot of the pro-NBA people posting, did not watch Netflix at all, which means they did not tune out of the NBA's five games to go watch themselves some NFL football. Now, they were terrible games. Again, as good as Steelers-Chiefs should be, it's considered a marquee matchup. It wasn't a good game, and neither was the night game either. That was an awful, atrocious game, to say the least, that we had to sit through and watch when you think about the Houston Texans not being competitive at all against the Baltimore Ravens. But in the NBA, though, look, Luka Doncic got hurt. That's not a good thing there. And for now, what they're saying is he could be out an extended period of time due to a left calf strain that he got in Dallas's game in the loss against Minnesota, 105-99. Mavs made it close. They came back from 28 points down to make it a contest, but you hate to see Luka go down like that. I mean, it was he's dribbling the ball top of the key and then kind of turns around, passes, and starts limping around. And then there was obvious frustration when he was taken off the court. He kind of screamed something before going into the tunnel. And I completely understand that. Guys don't want to miss games, and Luka Doncic is one of the best players in the league. Although, you know what? For his standards, though, this has kind of been a down year. You know, this has been a down year. He's down in every shooting category right now in terms of field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw percentage from last year to this year. Rebounds, he's down. Assists, he's down significantly. Points, he's down really significantly. I mean, Luka Doncic has averaged over 30, but well over 30 points a game the last couple of years, and he's at 28 points a game this year. Not that that's bad. Again, he's still at 28 points a game, but last year he's at 34 points a game. From 9.8 assists to 7.8 assists. He's down one rebound per game. This guy was always right there on the cusp of a triple-double for a season. Last year, he was very close. This year, a little different. But now he's going to miss substantial time, apparently, and be out, which is a shame. I like watching Luka Doncic play. He is obviously one of the best players in the league. He is a star player. Speaking of star players, it's amazing to me. I remember in Art, I know you remember this being out in L.A., but you know, when Kobe, who came up as a 17-year-old and then started to play heavier minutes at 18, Kobe at 35, 36 was pretty shot, right? He was not the same player. Then he had the Achilles, and that, you know, ended things for him in terms of the career. But By 36 years old, there was, you know, Kobe Bryant, obviously, was not the same player. Meanwhile, we're watching LeBron James here, who is going to be 40 years old in like 4 days. I think his birthday is December 30th, right? He's going to be 40 years old in 4 days. And dude is not slowing down. Like, how is this possible?
Yeah, beat Golden State last night. Really good.
I mean, big win for them over Golden State. But LeBron James, and I don't want to get into his politics. I don't want to get into what he posts. I'm just talking about LeBron James, the basketball player, okay? LeBron James is putting up over 23 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, still shooting about 50% from the field, still a dominant player, still drives the lane, no problem. It's, if you want to compare it to, say, soccer, he is Ronaldo. If you want to compare it to football, he is Tom Brady. If you want to compare it to baseball, it's hard to compare it to anybody in baseball in terms of who's really good. That, I guess, Bonds on steroids, hitting a bunch of home runs at 42, right?
Yeah.
But yep. I mean, I'm trying to find a guy who played well into his 40s at a high level who is not a steroid guy. It's hard to do in baseball. But LeBron's been in this league like 21 years. 21 seasons. And yeah, statistically, he's down from last year, but I think it's also his style of play potentially might be a little different. But my goodness, if this is down for LeBron, he can play a couple more years as a, quote, down player because he's still a dominant force out there.
The only problem with LeBron is, and watching those that series the last couple years with Denver in the playoffs, LeBron gets fatigued. In the third and the fourth, late in the fourth quarters.
Yeah, and that's why they have to really manage it. And if you look, the last few years, LeBron James is not remotely playing close to a full season. Last year, he played 71 games. Prior to that, you know, banged up, also load management, they like to call it, 55, 56. You know, the COVID year is the COVID year. But he hasn't played an 82-game season since 2017, 2018. His last season with Cleveland, and that was the second stint with Cleveland. He has not played anywhere remotely close to that number of games since. So they are managing the minutes. But remember, like, just to get into the playoffs, they may need him to play a lot down the stretch because the Lakers aren't a great team, of course. But it's mesmerizing to me. And I know people like to have that conversation of, is he the greatest of all time? Is Michael the greatest of all time? Michael Jordan, of course. How do you view it? I've always said, I think in terms of pure basketball ability, LeBron James is the greatest player of all time.
I say Michael.
I'm saying pure ability, okay? 6'9", 250, can shoot, can pass, can rebound. He can do more than Michael Jordan did on a court because Michael was not 6'9", 250.
He was 6'6".
6'6", and a lot skinnier than 250. Both great defensive players, both bring it on that side of the court, which I admire because I think, you know, we have Carl Anthony Towns here in New York, and he's a phenomenal offensive player, and he is leading the NBA in rebounds right now, but he's just not a very good defensive player. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but he's a great athlete, so how can he not be a great defensive player? To me, it's about effort, right? Or learning the skill of being a great defensive player. And guys like Kobe, who wanted to be the best, understood that, and they worked at it, and they became great players. Kobe Bryant was a great defensive player. LeBron James, great defensive player. Michael, great defensive player. Because they cared about that aspect of the game because they wanted to be the greatest of all time. But I think LeBron James, Michael may have the greatest killer instincts. He may have the greatest killer instinct. But I think physically speaking, LeBron James is the greatest player. Now, I'm not going to throw in Wilt Chamberlain and those generations. I think it was a different class of basketball back
James
then
Harden,
compared to now.
James Harden, very defensive player.
James Harden, another one, yeah, plays defense. I'm just kidding. He does not. But it just comes down to where I think to myself, LeBron James, to me, is the greatest player physically I've ever watched in basketball. But it was a big win over the Warriors yesterday. Here's LeBron afterwards.
Get right back.
Well, thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you, and thank you for another gift on Christmas.
Oh, absolutely. Merry Christmas to my family back home. I'm coming home, and I love the NFL. I love the NFL, but Christmas is our day.
There's LeBron afterwards. That's courtesy of ESPN, and he is correct. Christmas to me is
not anymore
the NBA. five games. Here's the thing, though. I wonder if there was a conversation. I wonder if the commissioner of the NBA called up Roger Goodell and said, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, I'm sure they had the conversation. Absolutely. Right?
Like, what are you doing? This is our day. You have Thanksgiving. Like, you can have that. This is our day. Like, shame on you for taking our Christmas day. And I think to a point, they'd be right to do that, right? Because when you think about Christmas, you think it's the NBA. You don't think it's going to be, of course, you know, the NBA played no games on Thanksgiving Thursday, November 28th. Kind of a respect thing, right? One, you want your players to be able to enjoy the holiday with their family. But two, you know that when it comes to the NFL, what do people do on Thanksgiving? While the turkey's in the oven, you go out to your backyard with your family because everybody gathers as a family, and you throw the football around. You play a little two-hand touch or flag football in the yard, right? That's tackle. Like a ritual.
Nah, tackle.
Or you can have a couple of beers and play tackle football and not feel the pain. I get it. But I just think that the NFL encroaching on Christmas Day was not a good conversation between commissioners, I would have to think.
And I'm sure they have this conversation every year because it's going to happen now every year.
Yeah, Adam Silver's going to be calling up and saying, hey, Roger, really? We're going to do this again? He's going to say, yeah, we made $150 million from Netflix for two games. You're darn right we're doing it again. And I wonder if Adam Silver says, okay, we're going to play like five games on Thanksgiving. Take that. But here's the problem for the NBA. The NBA can't do that because they don't get the ratings.
Yeah, none of
that
them,
the NFL does. They don't. The ratings.
The ratings are really bad right now for the NBA.
They are in the toilet. They are literally in the toilet. And what's interesting about that is, you know, the ratings are literally tanking in the NBA right now. And as of last week, they're down 17% across ABC, ESPN, and TNT. That's courtesy of CNBC Sports. I mean, 17% down. And it's a big enough issue that Adam Silver has had to address it. NFL, meanwhile, is killing it. They're averaging like 17.3 million fans per game. For the first 10 weeks of the season, they were. I mean, isn't that insane? There's a 7% increase as well, by the way, on the Amazon Prime games. But the NBA has a serious problem with ratings right now. It's, to me, the product is not very good. I'm sick and tired of three-pointers. Like, I'm watching that Knicks game yesterday, Art, because I'm flipping back and forth, right? And I'm curious to see Victor Wembanyama in action. He's a tremendous talent. But he's 7'3", for crying out loud, and he's sitting there shooting three-pointers.
Shooting threes. Yeah, absolutely. He should be underneath the basket.
He's 7'3", and he is shooting three-pointers, literally.
That is wrong. That's the thing wrong with the NBA.
Look, he does shoot 37% from three-point land. I get it. He's also averaging 10 three-point shots a game this year. Come on. Like, when you are 7'3", I don't care how athletic you are, The NBA I remember, Art, is you're playing inside.
Yeah. But Shaq, Kareem, Moses Malone. Oh, my gosh. Charles Barkley.
Ewing. I mean, these were guys who played with their back to the basket. Now, Ewing could shoot jumpers a lot more than, say, Hakeem or Shaq or guys like that. Ewing always had a very nice jump shot. But then I here's the difference, though. Those guys had bulk, right? Wembanyama is 7'3", 235 pounds. He is a toothpick.
Yeah.
A stiff breeze is going to knock him over.
And
guys, his height, you know.
Who's to blame? He's been in the league a couple years now. Who's to blame for that?
Well, I don't know if there's blame. I mean, this is the league today.
Of course there is blame. I mean.
I'm not blaming him. I mean, this is the style of basketball. You know, when you show up for your workouts or the combine and things like that in the NBA and you're 7'3", they ask you to go to three-point range and start heaving them up. Let's see if you can shoot threes. It's, you know, what's he supposed to say? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to add, 40 pounds of bulk and I'm going to be an inside force. They'd be like, nah, you know what? We don't want that. because there's no more half-court offense in the sense that we remember, where you have the unselfish guard, like a John Stockton, guy like that, who's going to wait for the center Magic to establish Johnson. Himself, and then he's going to throw the ball into them, bounce it into them, and let the guy do his thing. You don't have that anymore. So a Victor Wembanyama in today's NBA, where you don't have the time to set yourself up in a post and do a turnaround J or whatever it might be, or muscle your way in, you got to be shooting yourself some three-pointers, which is what he's doing. It is outrageous.
Pathetic.
And it's pathetic, because at 7'3", you should be close to the basket and not be taking 10 three-pointers a game. But that's exactly what he's doing right now. He's a great shooter. He shoots like 89% or something from the field, I mean, from the free throw line. He's an unbelievable talent. Don't get me wrong. He's a heck of a player. And what's amazing to me is he's only getting better, right? Like, he is only getting better. 42-18 yesterday. That's an unbelievable stat line. And four blocks. The guy's averaging four blocks a game. That's old school to me. You don't get a lot of guys that are blocking four shots a game, eight shots a game, like you've seen with Wembanyama. It doesn't happen that much in today's NBA. Like you had back in the day, we had guys like Mark Eaton and things like that, where, you know, you had guys who were specifically shot blockers.
Dikembe,
right. No. Not in my house. Yeah. I remember those ads,
we
right?
Missed him. We missed Dikembe.
Love Dikembe. What a great ambassador for the game, too.
It was great, yeah.
What a great ambassador for the game. Sad when he passed away recently.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace to Dikembe Mutombo. That was unexpected. I remember when Georgetown had, what, Patrick Ewing first, then Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning, Othello Harrington was a heck of a college player. I mean, they were like big man U. I remember that. They were big man U. That's so many great big men would go through Georgetown. Now it's all changed, right? The whole game has changed.
Oh, yeah, and the that's whole thing has changed. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm watching Wembanyama. Just in yesterday's game, literally. Just in yesterday's game against the Knicks, he put up 16 three-pointers, by the way. 16.
Wow.
Game before that on Monday, he put up 13 three-pointers. He's literally taking more three-pointers than regular shots within the arc. Literally taking more shots past the three-point land than inside the three-point land at 7'3". I will never get used to that. To me, that is something I will never get used to that at all, because I'm still old school basketball. I think that's one of the reasons why ratings are down in the league right now.
That's part
you
of
have
reason.
Great players. You have great players. Like your way again. You need to if you've never watched LeBron James play, you got to tune in to at least tell your grandkids one day. Yeah, I saw LeBron play. I went to a Knicksmas. We call it Knicksmas because the Knicks play on Christmas, right? And I had gone. Man, it must be 10 years ago. I went and watched a friend of mine invited me to a Christmas Day Knicks game, and it was against, I guess it was Cleveland at the time. Yeah, it was Cleveland. And I got to see LeBron James in person. And that's something I'll never forget, that you got to see maybe the greatest in person. A couple months ago, a buddy says, hey, I got an extra ticket to go see Messi. You want to go see Messi? I'm like, of course I want to go see Messi. I know it's not Messi at Barcelona, but it's still Lionel Messi, right? One of the greatest. And I went. So I can tell my grandkids one day, hey, I saw Messi play live. I saw LeBron play live. I saw Jordan play live. So if you have a chance, go see the great ones. But my goodness, the style of play is boring. An NBA game is boring because all they're doing is heaving up three-point shots. And thank you, Steph Curry. Great player, but Steph Curry to me ruined basketball by taking 40-foot jumpers, 35-foot jumpers. You're seeing it in the women's game right now with Caitlin Clark. Heaving up 30-footers, 35-footers. To me, that's not fun basketball. That's not exciting basketball. And that's exactly what the league has become now, and I'm not a fan. We're going to talk with Steve Ashburner, senior writer for NBA.com. We'll get his thoughts on this. 7'3"-inch players firing up 16 three-pointers, 29 over the last two games, out of 50 free field goal attempts, 29 of them have been three-pointers.
All over the league. All over the league.
Victor Wembanyama. Ratings down 17%. Why? And is that a thing that can change? We'll get to that coming up next. Dan Schwartzman on a Thursday, day after Christmas. That's right. Next milestone will be New Year's. I'll be back tomorrow as well. Don't forget. In for Rich on The Rich Eisen Show.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. You love their jingle? You're going to love their friendly, helpful service even better because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road. And the parts knowledge they have, it's all you need for your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll find you just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or quick service? They'll help you there and find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. So stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/EISEN. O'Reilly Auto Parts. As a business owner, you're always going that extra mile to pursue your passions. So you deserve partners who can help you go further with premium benefits and rewards. The American Express Business Platinum Card offers world-class business and travel benefits so you can get more for your business wherever it takes you. With the Amex Business Platinum Card, you can earn 1.5 times membership rewards points on select business purchases, and you can get complimentary access to more than 1,400 airport lounges worldwide, including the Centurion Lounge, so you can keep running your business while you're on the go. See how the Amex Business Platinum Card gives business owners like you the tools and rewards to do more of what you love. Terms and points cap apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/Amex Business. Let's talk Game Time, people, and the holiday season. Game Time's all about togetherness. And isn't the holiday season all about that, too? The answer is yes. This means when you bring people together at live events, the experience is that much better, and it's the perfect gift. And Game Time has this new feature called Game Time Picks. It makes getting tickets for live events even easier. I love using Game Time Picks because it filters out all the fluff, shows you only the incredible deals you want on the great seats you need, so you don't waste a single second searching through thousands of tickets. And then there's that all-in pricing feature I love. You see your total up front. There's no surprise fees at checkout. The price that they tell you is the price that you're going to buy. It's unbelievable. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code EISEN, $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Two past the hour. It is hour three of the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. NBA season rolling along. The Knicks win again. LeBron and the Lakers a big win over the Warriors. Sixers a big win at Boston yesterday. That's a great rivalry, Sixers and Celtics. But ratings in the league right now are down. And Jimmy Butler, what's the latest with the star Miami Heat player? Today they're saying they're not going to trade him. Do we believe that or not? Steve Ashburner, senior writer for NBA.com, joins us. Steve, first and foremost, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to you and the family, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. Merry Christmas to you and the listeners.
Thank you very much, Steve. Let's get right to it. The latest coming out today is that Miami says they have no plans to trade Jimmy Butler. Are you buying this, or is this a tactic to try to get as much for him as you possibly can?
Well, I'm not surprised by that. You know, and I actually think it's appropriate that he stay in Miami and kind of fix what he's helped to break. In my view, Jimmy Butler has been an unreliable number one on that team. I've never considered him the type of player that would lead a team to a championship. If he's your best player, you're not winning a title, in my opinion. Now, you know, he's exacerbated that by picking and choosing when he's available during the regular season. And, you know, that ultimately, you know, that comes with a cost. Last season, it in my view, it came with the cost of them being in the play-in. And when you have to play your way out of the play-in tournament, you know, that's just extra layers you have to, you know, surpass. And they weren't able to, you know, to maybe go as deep in the postseason as they could have had they gained, you know, a top berth. So, you know, I think Jimmy Butler has work undone in Miami, and he's at the stage now where, I mean, unless he's willing to go to a team that, you know, is very middling and attempt to carry them, I think he'd be taking a shortcut. It'd be a Rosie Ruiz for listeners of a certain vintage maneuver if he were to go to a contender, because all of a sudden he got paid to carry, and then he would be going to sort of ride coattails. So I hope it's true. I hope he remains part of that Heat culture. He hasn't exhibited a lot of that, in my view, recently, by his unwillingness to gut it out on many nights. But if it's true, great. If he goes somewhere, like I said, I hope it's somewhere where, you know, they're not considered a championship favorite, certainly, and maybe even a contender.
But, Steve, based on what you said, if he's 26 years old, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? Shape up, right? Like, you need to help us here. You got to change yourself. Yeah. But he's 35. You're not teaching an old dog new tricks. Aren't they better off just turning the page away from Jimmy Butler to Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo being the guys, rather than saying, hey, Jimmy, we hope you change? Again, he's a 35-year-old. He's not going to change, right?
Well, it's a good point. Yeah, I mean, getting out from under is probably a good thing. He has shown when he's not happy with his contract, he can be trouble on a team. You know, I heard rumors, you know, that, well, Golden State might have been interested in Jimmy Butler. Well, when Jimmy Butler played with Andrew Wiggins in Minnesota, he didn't have any tolerance for Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns up there. He didn't like that they made more money than he made. And, you know, he also cloaked it in, you know, things about their work ethic and how serious they were about winning. So to have Golden State, if they were to bring him out there, and, you know, you wonder what sort of friction there might be with Wiggins. No, you're right. And I think Miami would make a mistake if they committed big bucks to him, you know, long term. I mean, which to me is a new contract. I mean, he is getting older. He's logged a lot of miles, and he's trying to manage those miles, and that's hurting in the here and now. And I don't see that would improve on you know, his next deal at all. So you're right. I think for the Heat's sake, it'd be worth exploring deals. You know, I just think for an overall sort of a karmic situation, right, that Jimmy would have to do the work right where he's at.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Thursday. You mentioned Karl Anthony Towns putting up big, big numbers for the Knicks, 25 and 14, leading the league in rebounds. Knicks are rolling now. They're 20 and 10, playing really good basketball. When that deal went down, I thought to myself, great offensive player, dude does know how to play defense. Now that there's a 30-game window to look at and analyze, how much better of a team are the Knicks right now with him than if they had kept Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo and rolled with those guys?
Well, I mean, they were in dire need of size. And, you know, for Karl, playing center again rather than just a pure power forward alongside Rudy Gobert, it's been a little bit of an ask for him. You know, he had enjoyed that freedom of movement. But, you know, in this league, you are what you can guard. And I think that sometimes Towns struggled with the fours. They were particularly three inclined fours and you know, were a little quicker than him. So I think he's better off playing center. He has an advantage in drawing those type of players out to the perimeter with his shooting range. I wasn't sure how that deal was going to work out. I think it's worked out about as well as I thought, or not as well, you know, for the Timberwolves. I thought that they had labored for a full season to learn how to play with Towns and Gobert in a twin tower setup. And they had great success with it last year, getting to the conference finals. And now here they were changing it up again. I know that money in Towns' contract is a concern, but boy, when you're Minnesota and you have a chance to keep a high achieving team together, you almost have to accept that, you know, contract troubles are going to be a problem later, but eke another year out of it, please. You know, that fan base has suffered for a long time. As far as the Knicks, I mean, when, you know, if Mitchell Robinson can come back and provide defense, you know, when needed, you know, I think they are better off. And you know, I'm happy for Karl. I've known him since he was a rookie, and you know, that he was able to come in there and start strong. And there was none of the New York hand-wringing over, well, should they have made this deal? Shouldn't they? You know, I think with Randle, I mean, he had a pretty good start in Minnesota, but
yeah,
he was expendable for the Knicks because he really wasn't there when they were good down the stretch and in the spring. And DiVincenzo, I'd want him on my team, even though I think with New York, he overachieved last season. It's starting to look like that was a bit of a fluke season for him, where he bubbled up a little bit beyond what you could expect.
Are we seeing, though, a maturation in Karl-Anthony Towns? We know the first go that he had with Tom Thibodeau as his coach did not go well, and they didn't get along, and that was a concern when this deal was made, and he said, no, it's not going to be an issue. What are you hearing in terms of their relationship so far through these 30 games?
I don't hear anything untoward, so I'm going to take that as a good sign. If Tibbs was on board with bringing Carl to his team, as much as he stresses defense, I know the Knicks don't have a great defensive ranking right now. They're not playing that well at that end, but you know, I count on Thibodeau to be able to always sort of wring the max out of what a group is capable of. I haven't heard anything. I think he might be onto something. I think that Carl's been around long enough now, after 9 seasons in Minnesota, that you know, it's sort of time, and he's, you know, he's fully a grown man, and you know, he sees. I mean, I think that trade was a shock to his system. Maybe a little comfortable with the Timberwolves, and you know, you get that. I mean, it's great if he's near his New Jersey roots, but there's also extra pressure when you do that, and it's the New York stage, and it seems like he has, you know, he's approached it with the right frame of mind.
Yeah, different from Kyrie Irving, who came back to the New Jersey area, and of course it wasn't that successful in Brooklyn. Now, I'm going to give you two teams here, Steve. Tell me what's wrong with them right now. Both there's superstars on the team, yet they're not playing as well as they should. Boston has struggled as of late. Now, again, they're still Boston. They've still won 22 games, but the last 10 games, they've lost 4 times. They lose at home to the Sixers. What's going on with them, and what's happening with Denver?
All right, well, with Boston, I'm not worried about Boston. I think maybe you hit this time of year, having achieved what they did last season, seeing how they started this year, having a sense, they, you know, thinking, well, we'll be able to do this and take a long push through the playoffs again. You know, I would expect there'd be a point in this year where they would sag. You know, I don't think, unless this is a protracted, you know, slump of any kind, or if they actually lose multiple games in a row, I don't think it's anything to worry about. I think they've got everything they need. I mean, Porzingis went out again. You know, he's only played 9 games, my understanding is, and so he had an ankle injury. You know, that's not good. They were able to pretty much get through the postseason last year with very little from him, so it's not a crippling type of thing. But, yeah, when you're trying to repeat, you don't just come back with a pat hand. You actually have to enhance yourself in certain ways. And having Porzingis, you know, healthy and available seemed like that was going to be the easiest way for the Celtics to improve. I know certain guys have gotten better, Peyton Pritchard in particular, as a sixth man candidate. I'm not worried about Boston. I mean, if this was March, maybe I would be. But here in December, I think there's plenty of time for them to just sort of feel themselves and you know, get back to where they need to be.
What about Denver?
Oh, Denver. Yeah, Denver. Well, you know, Denver has taken steps backward to me each of the past 2 off seasons. You know, and so you lose Bruce Brown, and at least the player he was for the Nuggets in that title year, and then you lose Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. That to me is another step back. And internal development is nice. You know, I mean, Brown and Watson are good players on the rise, but you want those guys to be bonuses. You don't want them to have to plug holes that are opened up by losses of those guys I had mentioned. I just think that they don't have enough. Jamal Murray has not been that reliable, you know, Robin to Batman kind of a thing. He's great in spurts. In the postseason of their championship run, he was tremendous, but he's injury prone and he doesn't always produce at the level they need. I think that there's just too much of a load on Jokic. Michael Malone and his staff have never been able to write the numbers, you know, write as in a correct way, the numbers where they can sit him down and you know, not go totally underwater. Michael Porter Jr. is a guy who I think, has underperformed his contract. And because he's paid as much as he is with Murray, with Jokic, you know, and even Aaron Gordon, it's tough to supplement that and to caulk, you know, some of the leaks. But I do think it's personnel for the Nuggets, and I'm not sure how they go about fixing that. If there's unless there's a way in the buyout market after the trade deadline that they might be able to pick up some experienced help.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer for NBA.com, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. Last thing, the ratings for the NBA have come out, and they, as of, I think, Thursday, they were down 17% across the three major networks, TNT, ESPN, and ABC. Some people obviously worried of that, yet the TV deal numbers are massive. What do you think, Steve? And maybe this is a very long conversation, but real quick, what do you think you can attribute potentially to ratings just sinking for the NBA these days?
Well, first of all, let me preface it by saying if you were going to have so-called bad news about declined ratings, better to do that after you signed deals for $76 billion in broadcast rights fees, right? If this was a year ago when those deals were being negotiated, that might really pinch. But, right. You know, that said, I mean, the NBA obviously wants, you know, there's a prestige involved. There's certainly the partnership that your partners aren't going to be on the hook for a lesser product. So I think there is something to be said for a case that the league often makes about technology. I think you have a lot of streamers that maybe don't get counted in the Nielsen ratings. You have a lot of illegal streaming that goes on as well. I'm not sure the numbers behind that it would make a big difference. But in terms of the product on the floor, I think there are contributing factors, and I don't think there's any one thing to blame, but when you add up things like load management and the perception of that, and even with the player participation policy, you still have players who are out, rightly or wrongly. You have injured guys, and then you have, you know, some resting guys still. The length of games with the replay requests, the coaches' challenges, I think that can wear on people, you know, at home even more so than in the arena. I think when you're in the arena, you're all lathered up like the players. You're watching the game. You want to see what happens. There's lulls, but, you know, are people walking out early? I don't think that's a problem for the NBA. But at home, yeah, people might get a little antsy. They flip away. They don't flip back. I mean, who's to say? And then there's the three-point mania.
Yeah.
And that's my number one. I think the pendulum swing to over-reliance on three-point shooting has hurt the entertainment value of the NBA product. I think that it's not as interesting. I grew up sort of becoming a fan of the game when you had Dr. J and Dominique Wilkins and Bernard King,
yes,
and Marcus Johnson. And, you know, all of these sort of wing players and you know, who had interesting mid-range styles. You as a kid in the driveway or on a playground, you would imitate certain guys' shots. Well, everybody looks the same to me shooting from three-point range. The right. Individuality of the game and the specificity of the teams, they all start to look the same. Their players all start to look the same. You know, they've all but eradicated the low post banging of the, you know, the 7-footers that was such a big part of the game in the 70s when it was, you know, Lanier and Abdul-Jabbar and, you know, Moses Malone and Bill Walton and, you know, just the big men thing. And now, you know, I think, and here's another thing. The NBA bills itself as having the greatest athletes in sports.
Right.
And I think that largely has been true, and it probably still is true. But you don't have to be a great athlete to hoist three-pointers. You know, that feels like you all of a sudden you're watching a game at the Y where there's some 45-year-old insurance salesman going against the 20-year-olds. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I don't see you really. Yeah, you got to jump to get up your three-pointer, but it's not the same. And, you know, so that's not great athleticism to watch guys shoot threes. And I think that they've lost some sizzle that way in terms of what they sell. It's just too much. I would like to see them extend the length of the three-point arc and clip it off. Don't allow the corner threes. They're the easiest threes, and you know, that would be my suggestion. If you're determined to have corner threes, widen the court. And people say, well, wait a minute, those VIP seats, you know, they're really pricey. That real estate is valuable. Well, there's always going to be front row seats. Right. All you're losing is the top row seats, right? You're going to have one fewer row on each side all the way up to the top, and the top rows are gone then because you lost one per side. You still have a front row. So, you know, if I would widen the court because of the, you know, the size of these players and the mobility. If you want to keep the corner threes, do that. Otherwise, just put the corner threes and make it a tougher shot to try to encourage more inside that that line.
I'll tell you what it is for me. I agree. The 3-point. When I'm watching Victor Wembanyama at 7-3 shooting 10 3-pointers a game, 16 yesterday, by the way, I'm bothered by that. I grew up watching Ewing and Hakeem and Shaq and guys like that. What really gets me, Steve, is take the whistles away from referees, where anytime any action starts to develop, where it's, oh, back and forth, here the guy drives the lane, you know that whistle's getting blown. Like, ticky-tack foul calls to me have gotten out of control in this league, where it just kind of kills the flow of any game to where it's like, oh, there you go, stop the clock, get the guy at the line. They have to stop that. It's like hockey in the postseason. It's more physical. It's understood. You don't blow the whistle as much unless it's egregious. I think the NBA needs to adopt that because I'm sick and tired of the stoppages in play, more so than probably anything else when it comes to watching. So there's my two cents into the conversation. Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com. Are you tired of the whistles too, my friend?
You know what? I think the referees adjust pretty quickly, and the players adjust to the referees adjusting. So to me, if they start swallowing whistles, it's going to get out of hand rather quickly, and then the referees are going to have to snap it back by probably blowing the whistle more often. So I'd be careful about that one.
Well, you can't win, can you? It's hard to do. Steve, appreciate it again. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to you and the family, my friend. Appreciate the time.
Same to you, Dan. Entirely welcome.
Great stuff there. Senior writer, NBA.com, Steve Ashburner. Yeah, I can't stand the whistles. All right, we have a Thursday night football game. It's kind of funny that today is Thursday, right? It doesn't feel like a Thursday. It feels like a Friday because whenever it's a holiday, you think, okay, no, we're back to the work week today. It's a Thursday. Seattle hosting Chicago. Well, Chicago's terrible. Guess what, though? Kind of a important game for Seattle. If they want to keep their flickering playoff hopes alive,
yeah,
they need
and
the win.
I need some takes, too. Fantasy-wise.
Oh, well, guess what? I'm not the person to help you, but I'll give you a best-shot scenario. We're going to break down Thursday Night Football. That is next here. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. It's the Rich Eisen Show.
This episode is brought to you by Bleacher Report. How do you follow sports? From college football to the NBA? Bleacher Report brings you the latest news, live scores, and epic highlights from your favorite leagues, teams, and athletes, all in one app. Dive into exclusive shows hosted by your favorite athletes and original Bleacher Report series with breaking news, rumors, and predictions all season long. Download Bleacher Report to personalize your coverage.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Wrapping things up on a Thursday edition of the Rich Eisen Show, Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. There is a Thursday night football game tonight on Prime Video. You had Netflix yesterday for the Christmas Day doubleheader. You are continuing on the streaming services with Prime Video tonight. It is the Seahawks on the road at the Bears.
Last Thursday night game.
Last Thursday one. Night game, that's right. And the Seahawks need the win. They do not control their own playoff
destiny.
And I
have questions for you.
Oh, I'm sure they're fantasy related, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah. We got money on the
line. Chicago has lost, 9 straight games. So they're pretty bad, all right?
And Caleb's been sacked the most time in the NFL.
Yeah. It's not a good situation in Chicago right now. That's going to be an interesting offseason there. But they can play spoiler.
Absolutely they can.
They can absolutely play spoiler. Seattle right now is second in the NFC West. All right, they are trailing as of right now the Rams, who are 9-6. They needed a little help from the Jets. Seattle did not get that last week. I'll tell you what, that NFC West is terrible.
It's horrible.
Bad. I mean, it is really bad. It's the worst divisions are, I mean, AFC East at least has Buffalo, right? But the South is no good. There's a lot of bad football out there. The AFC South is horrendous. NFC South is horrendous. The NFC West is pretty horrendous as well. Some bad football teams. So the Rams, you know, the Arizona Cardinals are the only team that has a plus point differential right now in the entire NFC West, and they're plus +2.
And they're 7-8.
Yeah. Rams are 9-6, and they're minus -18. But they've won 4 in a row, so they've played good football, or good enough. Let's put it that way. They've played good enough to win games to where they potentially could be making the post. You know, they most likely should win the NFC West. You look at their remaining games on their schedule. They are home for Arizona.
That is Saturday night.
And then they are home for Seattle.
That's going to be a tough game.
I mean, if Seattle wins tonight,
yeah, they could win. If Seattle wins tonight, they could win next week and win the division.
Yeah. It's an interesting scenario that's playing out here. So if Seattle wants to keep its flickering playoff hopes alive, they have got to win tonight. And for Chicago, it's a pride issue, right? Like, you literally have just been so bad, you're losing games left and right. I mean, 9 straight losses is – the Giants have lost what, 11 straight or 10? I mean, I think they're at 11 straight.
11.
But, you know, this is a team. The Bears at one time were 4-2 on the season. Can you imagine that? They were actually 4-2 at one time, where you're thinking to yourself, wow, Caleb Williams looks good. They're 4-2, and then the bottom fell out. They lost to Washington, and from that point on, they have not won a single game. And they may lose 11 straight games. Their schedule's not easy, okay? It's home for Seattle and then at Green Bay week 18. They legitimately could go 4-13 having lost 11 straight games. So you got to believe Seattle with all that's riding on them this year.
And I'm hoping that because I got Seattle's defense and I've got a couple players on offense.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So what exactly are the questions you have? I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know a lot about fantasy football. I don't play a lot of fantasy football.
Well, how do you feel about Chicago's defense? Can they stop Seattle and their offense?
Well, probably not.
Probably not. You know, I mean, I'm in pretty good shape then.
Chicago's defense is nothing special. It's not terrible. It's nothing special. Their offense just doesn't score any points. Honestly, though, if you look at Chicago's defense compared to Seattle's defense, they're practically the same.
Yeah, the same, yeah.
The Bears have given up 2 more points this season than Seattle's defense. So maybe you can say the only bright spot for Chicago is their defense. I mean, would that be fair to say, I guess?
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not. But for your sake, yeah. Seattle's offense, by the way, isn't exactly anything to write home about.
Yeah, Geno gets sacked a lot, too. Yeah.
Geno has thrown for a lot of yards this year. He has put up a lot of yards. He's one of the league leaders in yards. He's going to break 4,000 yards passing with this game. But he's thrown 17 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Geno Smith has not been very good this year.
And gets sacked.
Gets sacked a lot. He's been sacked 45 times this year. I remember Geno at the Jets. I'm glad that Geno has lengthened his career. He's made some money now and has established himself a bit. I don't think he's that good of a quarterback. He had that career year, though, with Seattle, which is such a shock back in 2022 when he threw 30 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. I mean, that was literally out of nowhere, right? No one expected that. The guy had been a career backup after being a failure at the Jets as a starter the first couple of years after being a high second-round pick. Goes to the Giants. He's a backup there. He's at the Chargers, a backup there. He goes to Seattle. He's a backup the first couple of years. Gets an opportunity in 2022 and just shocks the world. Since then, he's kind of reverberated back to being the Geno Smith that you kind of expect. I think the word is decent, right? Like a decent quarterback. Nothing special to where it's you're going to build around the guy. And I think this is the worry people have for Sam Darnold. Is it going to be like a Geno Smith where he has, you look at his career, you say, wow, that was a heck of a year. Not, wow, that's a heck of a career. And with Sam Darnold, it's the same thing, right? Where has this Sam Darnold been in other stops? We've never seen it. He was a failure with the Jets, a failure with Carolina. Gets an opportunity just because J.J. McCarthy goes out with an injury in the preseason and Sam Darnold is thrust into the starting role of the Minnesota Vikings. And look, kudos to Sam. He's run with it. He's going to throw 35 touchdowns and 4,000 yards. Good for him. But is that the Geno Smith 2022, or is he now legitimately turned the page? Well, Seattle's going to win tonight because a lot is riding
there you
on
go.
Them
I like
in
to hear
this
that.
Game. Bears will lose their 10th straight game. No question about it. Guess what? I am back tomorrow sitting in the big boy chair again for Rich Eisen. It's always a pleasure, so tune on in tomorrow. I'm Dan Schwartzman, in for Rich right here. It's the Rich Eisen Show.
My World with Jeff Jarrett takes wrestling fans behind the scenes, along with King of the Mountain, Conrad Thompson.
I wanted to ask you about what you know, if anything, on the new WWE ID program, where they're apparently going to be working with some independent wrestlers.
My encouragement to any independent wrestler out there, build your value and then understand your value, and then you create your own leverage. There's no substitute for hard work and getting over.
My World with Jeff Jarrett, wherever you listen.